Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking out?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hey, Ramble fam, Andy here with quite possibly the coolest Ramble Meets guest we've ever welcomed to the pod. Ryan Barbel chatted to me late last year about his amazing career that's taken him from his native Netherlands to Turkey, Spain, Germany, and perhaps most famously, Liverpool. I also quizzed him, and he was more than happy to engage about him being big in the Dutch rap game.
And Dirk Kuyt will just smash it away, and Babbel will chase, and Babbel is lightning. And Babbel could be away here. This could wrap it up. Liverpool are in the semis again. They are simply unstoppable in Europe.
It's good by Milner. And Babbel! Ryan Babbel! What a big moment for Fulham. An enormous moment for Babbel. The one that he doesn't want to celebrate against his old club.
Taking on Giggs. He tries to hold him back. It's fallen for Kuyt. Babbel! Goal!
Hello Ramblers, Andy here, and we've got a great guest for you today. Not just a great guest for a Ramble Meets, but someone who would be great for Luke's game. When we get into it, you'll know why. It's Ryan Barbel, everyone, who I was very excited to speak about. He's got an autobiography out at the moment, which is not a written autobiography, but a rap album of an autobiography called The Autobiography, obviously. It's fantastic. It takes you through his feelings about his career, current issues. It's really terrific, and I know about hip-hop, so I know. Give it a listen, but also I hope you enjoy the next 40 minutes or so. Ryan's very effusive and interesting on his varied career, which is really a number of careers smashed into one. Something for everyone in this one, I think. This is Ramble Meets Ryan Barbel. So, Ryan, congratulations on the autobiography. What gave you the idea in the first place, tell our listeners, to, rather than write an autobiography, do an audio one?
Okay, so this is a time where I was in Ajax a few years ago on loan, and then we experienced the very first lockdown. At this time, of course, we didn't know how long the lockdown would take place. I remember being home, have no training, really nothing going on. And then I got approached by a Dutch journalist who asked me if I wanted to start the process by writing an autobiography, since, he was familiar with me and know that, you know, my journey was quite interesting. And he was like, hey, you know, you should think of maybe, you know, start, you know, doing this process. It maybe will take a year because you will have really tried to go in depth and think and go back on, you know, how you lived all those years from the beginning. So I was like, nah, you know, I feel like it's too early. I'm not ready yet. You know, I was by nowhere near thinking of, you know, if I think about autobiography, I'm thinking about, oh, my career is ending, but I by nowhere near have that feeling yet. So I was like, nah, it's too early. However, I did got inspired by the whole concept. And I was like, hey, you know, I have nothing to do. And I was like, why don't I take the concept of the autobiography and try to translate it into music format? So I reached out to a few of my music friends. I broke down the concept, and they were like, hey, you know, this is brilliant. You know, nobody did it ever before like that. And if you do it right, yeah, it can definitely be some special. So that's where the idea came from.
So just to let people know, if they weren't aware, music's not a new thing for you. You've been involved in music for a very long time, and in hip hop for a very long time.
Right.
When you were a teenager, was it sort of football and hip hop fighting for space in your head and your life, or did they coexist quite happily?
Yeah, I think, I mean, they coexist. I mean, obviously people know me mostly for football, but before I became professional, I already had a life, right? I was a young kid growing up, and in my culture, music was always a thing. In school, I always used to play in school bands. You know, I always had a good ear for music. And so it was already part of me, you know, part of many kids' life. And then I was just one of those kids. And at the end, okay, I was fortunate to become a football player. But music, I kept music there, right? That's where I guess, you know, the music always stayed a part of my life.
So, Ryan, there's always a footballer who takes charge of the music in the dressing room. Was that always you?
Not always, but I definitely try to have influences. of course, if you are in a dressing room with the likes of Steven Gerrard and Jamie Carragher, and, you know, they don't really let the music box get controlled by a 20-year-old who's, you know, comes... was new, but here and there I was able to slip my music taste in between the playlist.
So hip hop and Dutch football has always been kind of a thing, because it's not just been you. Memphis is a keen artist as well. You had Royston Drenthe in the past who loved to rap. It's not really something we see, is it? Footballers crossing over into music that much. And, you know, you're very well traveled. You know lots of footballers from all over the world. Do you have a sense of, like, how unique that is, that relationship between Dutch football and hip-hop? And why do you think that is?
I mean, I guess for us, it's quite normal. But, yeah, if you definitely take a step back and look around it, I mean, I feel like if you look in the UK has a great musical hip-hop culture as well. but I'm not sure if there's a football player who does music, if I'm wrong. So, I mean, you know, potentially, you know, you could have had footballers in the UK also being involved and you know, make some great stuff. But for us Dutch guys, like, we don't see it as us footballers crossing over. It's like I tried to explain, it's already a part of us and we feel like it's normal. We are already kind of accepted it by the culture and by the music, you know, industry and friends. And then now it's just, you know, one of those things like, okay, you know, we keep doing what we've been doing before, but since we're now, you know, have more, you know, since we now are known for football, yeah, people, it's new to people, like, oh my God, like a football player doing music, it seems different. I guess, you know, that's how it is.
I mean, do you get any pushback from that? Because I think the sense is what you were saying about not a lot of UK footballers maybe going into music, for example. There is a sense that this is what you do, stay in your lane. We see you as this. Do you experience any of that when you started to bring out music?
Actually, in the beginning, yeah. When I was younger, when I started putting out music, when I was 19, 20 years of age, I did a few things where I was, of course, involved in music video and in some, you know, some type of freestyle session. And yeah, even though it were only, you know, like a handful of things that I put out at that time, was nothing serious. It was also recorded in my summer holiday. It got received. It got perceived as in that I was constantly in busy in music and that I could by nowhere concentrate on football. So the media was portraying me like, oh, he's not concentrating on football. And then fans believed it and jumped on it. And then I got criticized. So, you know, the last thing I wanted was having the wrong perception about that. So I took a step back and stopped being involved with music on the forefront. After that, I asked myself, okay, well, you know, I'm still human. Football players, besides football, they have a hobby. Some players like to do PlayStation all day. Some players like to go out. Some players like to go party. And I like to make music in my spare time, right? So I was like, how can I stay involved without it backfiring on me? That's where in 2009, when I was actually in Liverpool, I started a music company. And I was more focused on actually finding talent than me being on the forefront as a artist. And that's where also, yeah, now the business side came, you know, looking around the corner. I had to learn music contracts. I had to learn how the music business was working. And that was a interesting journey, you know, meeting the right people who could mentor me and explain how, you know, things, you know, were working. And I'm still involved today in the music business.
Do you think that sense that people thought you should maybe be concentrating on football at the beginning was because you're at a big club like Ajax, where every time you drop a point in the Eredivisie, it's a massive big deal?
No, for sure. I mean, now that I'm older, I totally understand, you know, where the criticism came from. However, I think, you know, football players should be just for his performance, right? I feel like, in general, I mean, it's not something that I think will be changed very quick, but, you know, I feel like football players are being lived by other people, by the media, you know? I remember back in the days, Twitter times, also during Liverpool time, if I would put a tweet out after a certain time, let's say after 11 p.m., I got a lot of reactions like, why aren't you sleeping? You should be training. So I was like, oh, shit. Like, I cannot be on social media after a certain time anymore. Like, so, you know, you are really being lived by other people. And obviously, by the time I got more clever and intelligent and knew how I, you know, could use it to my advantage. But at the same time, you know, people need to realize, like, you know, we're also human. You know, sometimes we get 2 days off from football and then, you know, we just maybe want to stay an hour up later than usual. No, I definitely understand the criticism in the beginning, especially if you're in like 19, 20, you know, you just started out and you should be full hunger for football.
But at that age, it seemed like you already really had your head screwed on. I mean, you know, there's no denying what pressure there is at a club like that. But you've talked about how when you signed your first big contract, Your parents made you put loads of it away in a savings account, and or did you have an allowance or something like that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was fortunate, of course, to earn my very first contract. At that time, it was for me already a big deal. I think the first contract, which was considered still a youth contract, but it was like 15K euros a month, which was a massive big deal for a 17-year-old. However, my parents opened a separate account for me and they allowed me 1,000 euros a month, right? Because I was still living at home. They were like, you have no expenses, so obviously you're not going to need all that money. So we're going to save that for you. You have an allowance from 1,000 euros and make sure that they taught me about using the 1,000 euros. And then from that 1,000 euros, I had to learn also saving. So they were like, put 500 euros away. And then live off 500 euros, right? So now, after a few months, I had a lot of 500 euros saved. And now with that, I could maybe buy something once, you know? And that's how they taught me discipline about money management very early on. So, yeah, you know, that was a good lesson.
I mean, how hard do you think it is for young players, especially now? Because we want to spot the next big young thing earlier and earlier. I think because football's more athletic generally, it is sort of built towards younger players.
Yeah.
So how hard do you think it is for them, and how much need do you think there is for advice in that sort of situation, maybe from the clubs?
Yeah, no, it's very, I think it's very, very necessary, and it's very hard. You know, even me, even though I came up from a good household, I still remember actually the first time that I was 100% in control over my account was when I made that move to Liverpool, because now it was a UK bank account, right? Not a Dutch one. And now obviously my parents kept reminding me like, hey, Ryan, I hope you're not doing any stupid, you know? And of course, you know, I had my parents constantly in my head. But at the same time, it was, I had more freedom now. And yes, I had my experiences with making mistakes. So yeah, I can imagine, you know, you have also a lot of players who didn't really had a good household. And now they're left with all the responsibility very early on. And then, yeah, you know, they're going to make mistakes. So definitely, I think it's very important, you know, they understand and learn financial literacy and understand what it means, what money actually is, and how powerful it can be and how you can use it to your advantage. But also, you know, they need to learn the other side of it, how it can fire back and harm you if you use it the wrong way.
I mean, you've said doing this autobiography, the concept felt weird at the beginning because you don't feel like you're at the end, you feel like there's more to go. But having said that, at 34, it's like you've lived several football lives. It's almost as if your career is a combination of three or four different careers. You packed so much in there. You must have had to look back at it a little bit while you were putting together this album. So how do you look back at it now and all the twists and turns it's had?
I definitely think a lot of ups and downs. At the end of the day, I also think, in the way, in terms of the potential that I had, that what people described, you know, I think definitely I could have done way much more maybe with my potential. At the same time, I believe it was a lot of different factors why I maybe didn't really fulfill the potential. And it had to do, of course, with guidance, with mentorship. I felt there was a lack of support in certain areas where I felt like, okay, you know, if this coach or coaching staff would maybe put in a little bit more effort and trying to help me through this process, maybe I could have realized it earlier, you know. But at the end of the day, you know, I think I look back at a great career still, and I still have the ambition to play two or three more years. I feel fit enough still. Luckily, I didn't have very poor or bad injuries over the years. I actually recently heard that this is my 18th year as a professional.
Wow.
So, you know, a lot of ups and downs, but I'm very proud of the experiences that I've experienced.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
You talked about maybe not quite reaching your potential. I mean, something that comes across in the lyrics of the autobiography is that it's clear you've been quite stung by some of the criticism you've received over the years, particularly at home.
Right.
How do you feel about that now? And did writing the record kind of help you process that a little bit, I guess?
Yeah, so actually, me expressing myself on a record like this, I feel like in general, as football player, it's you have to be very careful how you express your feelings, right? Because we're getting fined so quick for expressing us in the wrong way.
Sure.
We cannot really always say how we really feel. So we have to always be political correct. And sometimes, you know, it gets frustrating, you know. And I felt like music was a unique platform where I felt like I could be honest in a very creative way, and I felt like the need to kind of lay down also a lot of my frustrations down, and the misunderstanding and the recognition that I felt at times that I didn't really got, I had to, you know, express.
And on that tune, Open Letter in particular, it's almost like a roll call of all the coaches at the beginning that you were under in your career. So Ronald Koeman gets a mention in there, Lou Van Gaal, you've got Danny Blind, Rafa Benitez.
Yeah.
How did those guys contribute to your career, and what were your experiences like working with them?
Yeah, I mean... On the song, of course, you know, I go in depth of feelings and moments and opinions that I received over the years from, you know, the different characters. I learned so much, even if it wasn't, you know, it's very clear that at the end I feel like, you know, I'm not a fan of Rafa Benitez, but at the same time I've learned to look and see the other side of the coin of how ugly football can be if you're left out in the dark, right? So now experiencing those few years under him, it came a few years later back at a different team, but now I was able to manage it better and put myself and twist the coin in my favor again, you know, rather than having an attitude or behave the wrong way that it could only make it worse. I've learned from all these coaches, whether it was a good time for me or a bad time. So I look back at the end, grateful that I was able to play under all these great managers.
Benitez really splits opinion, particularly here in the UK, where some fans have absolutely loved him and other clubs' fans have not loved him at all. What was it that didn't click between the two of you, do you think?
Well, funny enough, because, I don't really want it to make it a thing that it was only me, right? Because people may be going to look at me crazy, like you just have a thing with him. But it was actually a general opinion, even from the players who were always playing, that he was not really, a people's person, right? He was not really a person who was actually managing players on a human level to also give that confidence that you felt like, that was sometimes necessary, whether it was Fernando Torres or even Steven Gerrard at the time, they will tell yourself, like, they also had an odd relationship in the way he was managing them, right? So it was not only me. However, tactically, I have nothing negative to say, because that time, tactically, it worked very well. He was very clear, and how he also, with him analyzing opponents, it was always very clear on how we wanted to play, and us as team were able to execute it. And that's why he was so successful at times. But sometimes, especially with younger players, and you see it now, nowadays, managers are more invested in younger players and talent. And then you see also, you can get the best out of them more, you can take a 10, 20% more out of their potential. And that was something that I felt like I needed maybe also, because I couldn't discover it myself. And then sometimes you need that little push. And I felt like I didn't get that push from Benitez in this particular time.
So the second part of your career has been very, very different to the first, because when you go to Al Ain, maybe people aren't expecting you to come back to Europe, because when players go out to the Middle East or the Far East, people don't expect them to come back. What made you go in the first place, and what made you come back?
Yeah. So, well, actually, I mean, it's, I don't have to, dwell around it, but the main reason was financially. I was, so at one point, if you go take it a step back earlier, I was dropped from national team. And after that, the few years before I went to the Emirates, I was trying to fight to come back in national team. And at times I felt like I deserved a chance, but I didn't got the chance. So then at one point I switched the button. I was like, you know what? Forget national team. I'm just going to follow my heart and think what I should do for myself and my family long term. And in this case, I got this opportunity to go there. It was, close to Dubai. It was, of course, I don't know if you have been to Dubai, but of course it's a beautiful place to live and be. To be able to play there was for me a new experience. They compensated me at that time very well. So I was like, hey, why not? Let's just go, And that was the main reason why I went.
So what made you come back to Europe then? What made you think that, I've got unfinished business and I'm going to go and do this?
So I signed a 2-year contract, but unlucky enough, after 3-4 months being at the club, my career was there already over. there were a few incidents that occurred. So at the end, they let me know, like, hey, Ryan, we're sorry, but, you have to call your agent, because, we have to find a situation that you, leave the team. So again, I was there, for 3-4 months, and I signed a 2-year contract. So now I'm like, okay, so how are we going to do this, right? So eventually, I stayed and played for 7 months. And then in the summer from that season after, my agent was, able to get me out of the contract, and now it was like, okay, I think I was 29 at that time, that was a time of like anxiety, and I was very nervous, because teams didn't really were standing in line to sign me, even though I was a free transfer. I didn't play for 7 months, and then people felt like, yeah, like you mentioned, coming from there, like, you're not sure if he's still likable. But at the end, I was lucky. The Spanish team, Deportivo La Coruña, reached out and asked about me. They were in need of an attacker. I was a free agent. And they gave me a chance to join the team, and I was able to refine myself in a very short time. I think I scored 5 goals in 9 games. And then after staying at the club for only a few months, because the January window, I had an opportunity to go join Beşiktaş in Turkey, who was playing Champions League at the time. So now I joined Beşiktaş, playing Champions League, doing well. And all of a sudden, I'm all the way there again within a year time frame, from not knowing how my future was going to be, if I was going to find a football team, to a year later playing Champions League football again. Like, that was crazy. And with Champions League football doing well, now the Dutch media is writing about me again, like, oh, he's doing well, you should get a chance in the national team. And now, age 30, I come back in Dutch national team.
And so if you look at especially that second part of your career, the recurring themes are 3 separate spells in Turkey, and you end up having 3 separate spells with Ajax as well. I mean, I guess Amsterdam is home, so that's part of it. But what continually draws you back to Ajax and to Turkey, do you think?
Well, I feel like the way I feel still appreciated here in this country, Turkey, was for me always a good reason to come back. Personally, I feel more appreciated here than actually back home, even though sounds crazy. So that was the main reason for coming back to Turkey, or always trying to find opportunities back here in Turkey. The two reasons that I went back to Ajax were two total different reasons. The first time that I went back was obviously trying to get back in national team. This was 2012. Even after a good season, became champion at that time, I still didn't got, a chance to play and show myself again. But the last time had actually to do with me playing in front of the public eye, because it was in preparation to the Euros at that time, who was still a year earlier, in 2020.
Still in 2020, yeah.
Yes. So I was like, hey, if I am going to play in a good team, a good Ajax team, which similarity plays as the Dutch team, then I can be already in that system. And then at the end of the season, which at that time I was, a starter 11 in the Dutch national team under Ronald Koeman, it would have been, 1+1=2. And then I can roll into a good form into the Euros. Well, unfortunately, it didn't happen that way. We got Corona, the Euros got set, a year later. And obviously that had a big impact on my journey for, the national team particularly.
And it had a big impact on the Netherlands in general, didn't it? Because Ronald Koeman went off to Barcelona. Do you kind of look back, do you and some of the other players look back on that and think of what could have been if the Euros had actually happened when it was meant to?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we were at that moment, we were in the elevator up, we had rebuilt a new wave, how they described it in Holland. Ronald Koeman brought life back into Dutch football. And we were doing well, we were doing well. So everyone had confidence. This was, of course, before everyone had all these injuries, Virgil van Dijk and Memphis and et cetera. We would unfortunately never find out what could have happened if the Euros was, in 2020. That's football.
And obviously, your third spell at Ajax got curtailed for that reason, as you were saying, but you must have got a closer look. All of Europe has been amazed by Ajax under Erik ten Hag over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah.
Being an Ajax boy and knowing the club so well, what is he doing differently that's making them so powerful in Europe at the moment? Because they're doing it again this season.
Yeah. I must say that ten Hag is, in my opinion, a very unique coach. in terms of the way he wants to play. I feel like he modernized a few positions, especially the fullbacks. He added a few extra roles to them that in certain positions of the game, they become a midfield player. And that added extra value to keeping the possession. Also, without the ball, the way they would press a team, the fullbacks would go all the way up so that the attackers, the front three, would have an extra man helping, pressing up front, playing in the back 1v1. Not many teams, especially in England, want to risk 1v1 in the back. They always want to make sure they keep everyone in the back. So, yeah, that's the difference, the main difference, that he is able to, you know, pick the right players and put them on the position, and is able to perform that on the highest level. And you see, you know, what's happening. They always retrieve the ball back on the final third and able to score goals there and stay away from their own goal. And yeah, he has done that well over the past few years.
And for you, it's, I guess it's kind of a strange season in Turkey because Trabzon are well away at the top, but Galatasaray and all the big three in Istanbul are struggling a little bit.
Yeah.
Of course, you know Beşiktaş so well as well. But despite the fact you're struggling domestically, you guys have had a really good season in Europe so far as well. And you're in a group with Lazio, Marseille, not easy, some big challenges. So how have you found that? Because it's almost like a Champions League group on paper, isn't it?
It's interesting. But the people who have experience playing in Turkey would tell the same. It's actually, without being disrespectful, a little bit easier to play European games than Turkish games.
Right.
Turkish games are very difficult to play by the fact that the organization in a game is if you look at a Turkish game, it's not really organized and really structured how it is in England or in Holland per se, right? So that leads into a very open game, even though on paper, when you see a giant club as Galatasaray playing maybe against a bottom team, if you look actually at that game, it can still be a very open game. This team can still have chances against us because they're so unorganized, and that makes us unorganized. So, yeah, you know, Turkish games, Turkish league is not easy. It's a very tough league, very physical. And yeah, you know, the leagues in general, you know, this is now my seventh year having the experience playing in Turkey. The top three is always actually struggling normally in the beginning of a season. They're leaving a lot of points on the table, but then they kind of like find themselves back by December, January until the end of the season. And then the other teams who are doing well, they lose energy and fall back. So normally, you would say, okay, you know, Trabzon looks comfortable, but it doesn't say anything. You know, Galatasaray right. has been champion a season where they were more or less 19 points behind, and it was already February, and they still became champion. So anything can happen in Turkey. Turkish football is a lot of sensation. But that makes the league so nice.
Finally, I know you're not mopping up your career just yet, Ryan, but if you're looking at the next stage, with the music coming back to the fore, could MLS be a possibility? You get the two things sort of moving together?
I'm definitely open-minded for MLS. I'm definitely open-minded. And actually, it was already a kind of like a dream of me for many years to play in a great city in MLS. Not only because I think, you know, the football there has developed over the years, but also that I have something special with America in general going on. You know, I know I have a lot of friends there. I go there a lot during my holidays. So yeah, you know, if there's an opportunity to go there in the future, I definitely will consider it.
Well, look, thanks so much for joining us, Ryan. Best of luck with the record. It's fantastic, like I said.
Thank you.
Football Ramble Presents is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.